Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
your
has been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out two weeks
what
ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Two weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Oh, I want to be
are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and for this fabulous April 24th, this Saturday, we are broadcasting live from the Log Mahal in Payson, Arizona, in the middle of our Spring Fling event. And what a great show we have in store for you. It's amazing. It should be 70 today, and it was snowing yesterday. Go figure. Only in Arizona. So the question is, why would you live anywhere else when you can have such a variety? It's pretty cool. We have the best of both worlds. But I'm kind of biased. I'm a native. I've lived other places and then come back. So anyway, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you so much for joining us. If this is your first time listening to our show, welcome to the broadcast, and thank you so much for joining us. We are broadcasting 3 times a week now. It's pretty great. And last week, we celebrated our 100th episode on Blog Talk Radio. I've been doing this show since 2004, but we moved to Blog Talk Radio just over a year or so ago, and we are having such a tremendous response. So thank you for participating. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, what we do here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, every week on our fabulous shows, we talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And this week is no exception. We have an incredible week. We are on the fourth key this week. Knowledge is power. Not knowing is powerful. And the value in this key, if you are a subscriber to The Easy and you saw my quote from my husband, he always says, I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And what I don't know, I delegate. And he evaluates his knowledge base constantly. And he's constantly assessing what he knows and what he doesn't know, and is it something that he needs to learn, or is it something that he can delegate effectively? And so we're going to talk about what we need to know about our finances. There's specific categories in your life that you need to address. And whether you have addressed them or not is not important. Whether you knew this or not is not important, because we're going to learn together today what it is that we need to know to become financially independent, and not only to build that wealth for ourselves and our families, but how do we preserve it? So we're going to talk about all those things that we don't know, and you can decide for yourselves, once you know what you need to know, do I want to become an expert at this, or is this something that I can have a mild accumulation of knowledge and then delegate? But you never know what you don't know, and that is where people get hurt. So we're going to talk about that in the second hour during our key segment. But this hour, we have some incredible news stories. I'm so excited. Minutes on Your Money is really good this week. As always, we have our news by the numbers. Blair Cherrier is sitting in our producer's chair. She's also moderating the chat room and host of the News by the Numbers segment. So we'll be hearing from her later to see what's going on in the markets. In addition, we have Jeff Cutler joining us today. Jeff is not only my personal financial advisor, but this very show that you're listening to is an outgrowth of our time together when he invited me just to participate on his show that he used to have years ago called the Financial Fitness Forum. And every Saturday we would hash it out. He would talk about the stock market. I talked about mortgages, credit, and real estate. And we took show guests and callers, and we had a ball. And he's the one that created Fluffy the Financial Dinosaur when we're talking about how do we teach our kids about money. So he's going to be joining us today, and he's going to talk about banking and the different types of savings vehicles and investment vehicles that we need to get where we want to go and why we want to split them up and spread them apart, as well as you'll probably get some great reminiscing, too, from the two of us. We also have our popular segment, Minutes on Your Money, which has grown into its own show on Tuesday mornings. Start your day the millionaire way by tuning in at 6:30 a.m. and get a 15-minute uplift on what you can do in your life today to live like a millionaire. And I'm not just talking about going out and blowing a lot of cash. No, we're incorporating specific values and techniques that is common throughout millionaires and billionaires that when applied regularly and consistently over time is what catapulted them to their financial independence. And it's something that we can do too. We can emulate those. It's the greatest thing. And neurolinguistic programming teaches us that the best way to become excellent is to model other examples of excellence. So we're going to deal with all of that too on today's show. We have some interesting stories today on Minutes on Your Money, plus our trivia question. This week's trivia question is from Wednesday's Midweek Update show. So if you're a regular listener, you have a chance to win. But if you're not a regular listener, if you're sporadic, you can also have an opportunity to win simply by subscribing to our electronic magazine every week. And we've been having some issues the last few weeks. I don't know what's going on with our provider, so I want to apologize if you haven't been receiving him consistently. We've been trying to identify and address the problem, and we'll be moving probably to a new service here shortly to help deal with that for ourselves. So anyway, but in addition to news, tips, tricks, and information about the upcoming broadcast, and valuable tools that you can incorporate into your life to become financially independent starting today, we also feature the trivia question so you can have it before it's aired on the show. So if you haven't had a chance to listen live, by all means, download. We are available in several formats online. You can go to our website, www.unlockyourwealth.com. and listen from our website to archive broadcasts. You can also go to Blog Talk Radio and search us, Unlock Your Wealth. And then you can iTunes it. For those of you who have to have it on your iPhone or iPod in order for you to listen to something, iTunes it. We are becoming rapidly one of the top downloaded shows, and we were recommended by Wealth Magazine, which is also pretty exciting too. So download us from iTunes as well, and we are podcasted after the live broadcast, so you never have to miss a minute. It's so great. It's pretty neat. That was one of the things that made me so excited about moving the show from regular radio to Internet. Plus, I'm worldwide now, so everybody can learn, and it just helps me further my mission. So anyway, I digress. How about this week's trivia question? This week's trivia question on the Midweek Update, we talked about 11 ways to cut your expenses while in retirement. All you have to do is name one of those expenses to win. Now, we have some incredible, fabulous prizes. every time we have a guest on the show that has written a book or has some sort of product or service, one of the contingencies is they have to give us some of those things. They have to give us one of those items and autograph it for our trivia question winners. So you can pick from the library that we have accumulated. Jeff Cutler also has a book, and I have a book coming out soon. I'm so excited. However, if you pre-order our book, by the way, let me digress one more time, you can get the free ebook. The ebook is not free, and it's going to be available on Kindle shortly, but if you pre-order your hard copy of the book, you can get a copy now to start perusing via ebook if you order yours today. So you can get a copy of my book. If you don't like me, you can get a copy of somebody else's book. That's okay, too. I will not be offended. We also have all kinds of financial coaching, credit report review, on identity theft risk management analysis, all sorts of stuff that you can choose from just by answering the question. And if you're a regular listener or an eZine subscriber, you have an edge on the competition. So to win, you can win one of three ways. You can call in to win at area code 718-508-9002, 718-508-9002, and you can call in to win on the show. Blair will be taking your answers, and if they are correct, we will feature you on the air and let everybody know what it is to win. Be prepared to cough up some personal information so we can get these items to you. Additionally, if you were listening from our blogtalkradio.com/unlockyourwealth show page, you can join the chat room and you can chat in to win. Blair's moderating our chat room, so you can pop in and say hello. And if you think you have the winning answer, by all means, the first one in to win, who is correct, is the winner. And if you're listening from download, the question may not have been answered through the broadcast. And if that's the case, you can email in to win. So simply just send us an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com to subscribe, and trivia@unlockyourwealth.com if you have the answer. You could be our next trivia question winner. While I'm thinking about it, contest-wise, we are having a mascot contest. The Keys for Kids book is ready to be illustrated, but we don't know who our mascot is. We're looking for an animal and a name. So if you think you have the answer, $100 to you. Everybody could use an extra $100, don't you think? I know that I would never turn down an extra $100 if I had the answer. So please email us at mascots@unlockyourwealth.com, mascots@unlockyourwealth.com. We're going to have this throughout the rest of this show season and our first show of next season when it gets time to declare our Financial Independence Day and we start our Summer of Savings promotion. We will announce our winner on the air, and if you want to be a guest, we'd love to have you live, and you can talk about how this show has benefited you and your family. So anyhow, moving forward, we have on our Minutes on Your Money today, is the recession ending? Some Americans don't believe it. I know that I don't. Anyway, Associated Press writes that the clerk at the candy shop does not want to cry. She is determinedly cheerful, a professional smiler, and dressed head to toe in bright turquoise. But standing next to a display of plastic-wrapped candles and teddy bears, her face crumples at the most basic of questions. Are you doing okay? I'm sorry, she says, wiping her eye with a shirt sleeve, her voice in a shaky whisper. Because of the end of the month, there's nothing left. I don't know what to say. It's almost getting to the point where I don't know what we're going to do anymore. 4 years now, Julie Bittner has rung up customers in this little store on the charming grassy square of the Hout of Twinsburg, Ohio. And from her view of the storefront, she has watched the fortunes of ransacked auto workers' mecca slowly drain away. Streets once teeming with people are now deserted, and some days, she says, not a single soul comes through the door. She's seen the headlines, the recession is ending, unemployment is stabilizing, from Wall Street to Washington, the messages are coming, America, the worst is over, let the spending begin. But in places like Twinsburg, where for so many the misery goes on unabated, people aren't buying the rhetoric. And if brighter days are ahead, they say that they're still awaiting the dawn. And that's our biggest challenge, folks, is it's hyperbole. It is mostly hyperbole. And I think that this is a sign of things yet to come. Because everybody's putting on this happy face, and it's not so happy. According to the Associated Press GFK poll conducted in early April, many Americans' impression of the economy and their own personal financial dire straits have not budged in a long time. Bittner says, who are they trying to kid? Are they trying to make you think it's better so you'll go out and spend? Well, clearly that's the message that's being sent. The nascent fragile consumer confidence, which sank to a record low about a year ago, could keep the fledgling economy recovery stuck in first gear, says Kenny Goldstein, who's an economist at the Conference Board, a research group that keeps close tabs on consumers. And he says when you're stuck in first gear, he warns, there's more of a chance to hit a pothole than if you're cruising over an open stretch of highway. We were told this once before by our fabulous government, and we treated our homes and our home equity like ATM machines, and that's what got us into this already. And I think that the American consumers aren't as stupid as the government is treating them or would prefer them to be. And I can't stand being patronized by somebody who thinks that they know more than me when they've never walked a mile in my shoes and they have never learned the things I've learned, had the experiences I've had, and understand the foundation from which I am coming from at this particular moment. Most importantly, I have problems with politicians who have never done anything but politics. Until they have made a payroll, until they know what it's like to employ people and lay awake at night wondering, what am I going to do to make payroll this week, to make sure the people that have been loyal to me and serving me to help me further my mission, how am I going to do that? That's why when Ed Winkler talked about what he was doing in his run for Congress late in life, it's because he went out and got all this great business experience. He lived, he understood that you can't just keep writing checks that your behind cannot cash. And I think that this girl, just like everybody else that's being interviewed, is savvy to that. She knows that this is not so fabulous. So it says, a look around, houses are well kept and middle class in Twinsburg. The lawns are mowed, there's a Starbucks and a Walgreens and a pretty white church and a steeple, and people live there, and right now they're looking at a black hole. The hulking Chrysler stamping plant that once employed thousands will shut down forever in June, and the 400 or so workers left will scatter in search of a paycheck. And while people like Doug Rice, president of the local auto workers union, is still held out hope that a savior might step in and buy the plant, maybe turning it into a new manufacturing hub, the plant's slow death has spread throughout the town. And this is just one snapshot of many that's going on throughout America. And you can lie to yourselves all you want, but at the end of the day, the challenge is, doesn't matter what Washington says. It matters what's going on in your wallet and what's going on with your family. And we're not buying into the hype this time, mostly because I think a lot of people have lost faith in this president, and I don't know that the people that voted him in are the people that are necessarily suffering. And And I know that he's disappointing those people, too. Talk about low presidential ratings. So how about some good news? Let's switch things for a bit. Would you like to know who's not charging you to put a bag on the airplane? Five major carriers on Sunday agreed not to follow the lead of a small Florida airline that plans to charge for carry-ons. Their commitment comes just in time to keep travelers from running for the exits during the peak summer flying season, but it's doubtful that it marks a change in strategy. Airlines are going to tack on every fee that they feel they can get away with while it bolsters their revenue stream to keep low fares the same. They don't feel like passengers will tolerate losing their sacred free carry-ons, at least not right for now. The promise to New York Senator Charles Schumer from American Airlines, Delta Airlines, United, US Air, and JetBlue comes despite the fact that some of those same airlines are expected to report first quarter losses next week. They were stung by higher fuel prices and the heavy February snowstorms. Ancillary fees for travel include baggage fees, reservation change fees, and other miscellaneous operating revenue have been piling up. So why are they still operating a loss? I don't know if it's the unions or what, but U.S. carriers said that they totaled almost $2 billion in the third quarter of 2009, roughly 36% higher for the same period last year. And 26 large airlines, those fees made up 6.9% of their total operating revenue. Can you imagine that? That's nuts. Major carriers risk alienating customers if they follow Florida Spirit Airlines' lead to impose a baggage fee on carry-ons. In August, Spirit will be charging customers up to $45 to place a bag in an overhead compartment. Other fees haven't stopped people from flying, but many can be avoided. Carry-on bag fees would be hard to avoid. We believe that it's something that's important to the customers and that they value, and will continue making them available at no charge, says Roger Frizzell, American Airlines spokesman. So now you know where you won't be charged for carry-ons. And how about home sales? And I was just engaged in a conversation last night at dinner. I know that Blair's going to go through that a little bit further in News by the Numbers. But home sales rose a little more than expected in March, reversing 3 months of declines as government incentives drew buyers in and kicked off what is expected to be a strong spring selling season. I don't know how that's going to happen because that home buyer credit ends next week. So, and all we've done is poach future customers. So I would not hold your breath, those of you that think the worst is over, don't hold your breath, because there are so many people, like in the first article, that aren't even, they're just thinking about how are they going to put food on the table, let alone buying a new home just to capture $8,000 in tax credits. The National Association of Realtors said that the previously occupied homes rose 6.8% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of $5.25 million last month, to the highest level since December. And February sales figures were revised downward slightly to $5 million. Sales have been expected to rise about 5.2% to $5.25 million, according to economist surveys by Thomson Reuters. The results show that the housing market may be stabilizing after a devastating bust, but the true test will be whether the market can stand on its own after federal tax credit expires at the end of the month. No, it can't, and no, we're not out of the worst of it, because the leading cause of foreclosures is strategic default right now, people deliberately walking away because they are so far underwater. Banks are refusing to waive equity, and they're I'm working with a client right now. They gave him the same exact loan that he had before, except they tacked on $4,000 in fees, but they gave him the same interest rate, and his payment actually went up. Isn't that nuts? And they waived no principal. They did no principal reduction. And it's not like we're getting away with anything on these, because you have to pay income taxes on the amount that they waive. And The banks are made whole. Every dollar you flake onto the banks, Congress already spanked us and the president once and took this money out of our hide in the form of these this TARP money. And so the banks will be made whole. Why they're not taking the money that's already been appropriated, whether we wanted to as individual taxpayers or not. We gave this money up. We've already paid for our principal reductions. Let's get on with it. This real estate market is not stable. I don't care what any of these people come on my show and say. They're full of baloney because we've yet to see some damage. There are still foreclosures out there, and they're going on not by accident this time, but on purpose. And we haven't seen anything from our commercial sector. Banks are holding back because they don't want two real estate markets to go bad, both consumer and commercial and residential. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I am going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be back with our Investor's Edge. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Here I am. Oh, you thought I wouldn't show up? You thought you could take your credit cards, live beyond your means, spend all you want, not budget a plan, and avoid me? I'm your worst nightmare, baby. Do you know who I am? My first name is Bad, last name is Debt. I promise you, I'm the one that you'll never forget. Cause I can turn your whole life into a wreck. Fix it so no bank will deposit your check. I'll make it so no creditor will show you respect. Hang around like 100 pounds round your neck. I'm the coldest you ever met, trapping you in my net. And I'm gonna make you regret getting in the bad debt.
Today, we are going to be talking to you with my personal financial advisor, as well as one of my dear, dear friends who I've known more than a decade, And like I was saying in the beginning of this show is an outgrowth of my guest appearance on a show he had called the Financial Fitness Forum. And we screwed around. We got in trouble with the FCC. We had a good old time. We'd be up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning mixing down these cool intros and things. And we had a ball with this show. He's the one that created Fluffy the Financial Dinosaur to help teach our kids about money and help teach us how to teach our kids about money. And we've just done some really awesome, fun things over the years together. And I watched his daughter grow up and everything. And he's got her married off, and now he's an empty nester. And so he just gets to have fun and enjoy his life. And so I thought, well, why doesn't he come on the show and let's talk about different types of investment vehicles? So I want to welcome to the broadcast Jeff Cutler. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, howdy. Yeah, we were having this big community sale over here, and I was going through a bunch of CDs, and here was all this stuff with Fluffy the Financial Dinosaur segments and the paper plastic segment that made us famous on Salem Broadcasting.
I would say more like infamous.
Yeah, anyway.
Yep.
So how are you doing, since we're not going to talk about your first quarter statements?
Well.
No, that's fine. Pardon?
The knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful key. I'm cool with not knowing that you're dealing with my money, so I figured I don't need to review it right now. How's that?
That's fine. Because it's more of shop talk for people, so. And
yeah.
Investing is so individualized, like, got to have a personality for it, right?
Well, agreed. But you have to have a sense that you want to make a difference. It's not just about you being in financial services making a lot of money, because that was easy for me. I was a Series 7 licensed stockbroker when I was 23, and I actually worked at a pretty crappy firm. Everything that they were market makers in stunk, so what I actually did was I talked all of my customers into shorting our stocks because I knew it was going to go down. And
nice.
And I was one of the top producers at our firm. I was one of 40 women, and I was a smart aleck. Oh, boy. I was inappropriate, let me tell you, as a stockbroker. But you know what? At the end of the day, I mean, you know, you get off work at 2 when you're a trader. In Arizona, you get off work at 2, you can go golf in the afternoon. You know, you get to screw around, you have your whole day, your weekend starts sooner than everybody else's. But there's no real value in making millionaires more money, because what difference are you making them? They're still going to eat from the right side of the menu, as Fred would say. You're not going to buy them one more steak dinner that they couldn't already buy with the wealth that they've accumulated. So there wasn't any value in that for me, and that's when I went into investment advising. I'm like, I want to make a difference. I want to show people how to get to this point.
Right. So basically at that point you gave up your 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's now 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. You're certainly not banker's hours anymore.
Uh-huh.
Well, pardon. Yeah, it's one of those commitments that we make, and I find it funny some of the commercials on the radio now that depict us as these very wealthy, to-do people that just goof off all day with some of the new Scott Trade commercials that are out, and it's really not that way. The average investment advisor makes a comfortable living, but nothing to have a yacht called Your Money. to dispel those rumors, and you know that starts the first catalyst, right, Heather? Is people when you say, "Well, a financial advisor," and the first thing he says, "Well, when I have money, I'll see a financial advisor." Well, how did those people get money? Is they started a relationship with somebody, and we're finding fewer because of costs and regulations and everything. There's fewer and fewer people that do extend their hand to offer financial advice and guidance to people that are just starting out. And that makes a big difference right there. It's just taking those first couple of steps at talking to somebody. How do you learn how to do something? You go to school first to learn for it. So even as an investor, wouldn't you start with working with somebody early on, or wait till you have a massive amount of money and then try to deal with it? I don't know of any wealthy people that have ever not taken steps in mentorship along the way or waited till they were wealthy and then asked for advice. So these people that say, well, when I have money, I'll talk to somebody, that's how you make the money, is talking to somebody or listening to shows, reading books, listening to tapes.
Well, you know, I think it's because people don't realize that most of the wealth isn't windfall in this country. It's been accumulated slowly over time.
Correct. And a lot of it was simple and not overnight, and a lot of it was blood, sweat, and tears, and some of it was just strategic planning. And as you and I talked for many years on the radio, that's the key element. You can't build a house without a set of plans. You can't start an investment without some concept of what is this money for. It still amazes me how many people I sit down and talk to and said, this is a good amount of money you've saved. What is it for? And they give you this deer in the headlights look because nobody in my industry ever bothered to even ask them. We say, oh, you're this age and you're this, so technically you should do this. They never even thought about what it was for. They were just guided the whole way and didn't really understand why they were saving.
And these, you know, aren't necessarily the great unwashed. These are people that you would anticipate have an understanding of investment goals and objectives. You know, I can't wait for this book to get in my hot little hands so I can give you a copy of the Yes You Can book that I participated in with the late Jim Rohn and Dr. Warren Bennis, because I quoted you in the book when I wrote about self-empowerment. And I used your famous phrase, people don't plan to fail, people fail to plan.
Very good. Well, thank you for the credit to phrases, which are probably paraphrased from other phrases. We go through life here in bits and pieces of things and slowly form our own character and judgment, which is funny. You started off with some of the stuff about things
that
changing.
You used to having that one commercial for your company. It was always on there when I had to fill in for you to do the financial updates that one week. That was the one that they played every time, and so it got drilled into my head every day for 5 days.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and right now we're busy regulating an industry where they're trying to regulate the morality of an industry by imposing rules. And as we was an interesting study today, as this SEC thing breaks out, that the people, the SEC, that were regulating the financial authority, trying to regulate morality, were actually sitting watching pornography on the internet for hours. So I don't really, I can't quite encapsulate the hypocrisy in that. But if we just spent more time regulating the character of who's in our industry versus trying to regulate the morality of it, we would have better suited for the average everyday investor. And I'm sure that applies across the board, from the mortgage and financial industry regulations, is housing regulations, and all these things, right?
Well, I think that the one thing that government is so arrogant that feels that it can do is to regulate morality. Now, how do you get a very liberal president regulating morality when they're supposed to be the ones that are socially saying, don't regulate me? But it's like a pick-and-choose kind of morality. Like, don't regulate my bedroom, but regulate my boardroom. And it's like, well, wait a minute. And then, you know, you've got the conservatives that say, regulate my bedroom, but don't regulate my boardroom. And how about, why don't we get off the regulation of morality trips and let people be people, and slowly and surely, you know, socially we're a pendulum. We swing and then we get to an extreme, and then when we realize that extreme is too much, we swing in the opposite direction. So all we have to do is try to figure out how to control the broad swings, if it's controllable in a pendulum, and focus on not what everybody else is doing, but what am I doing? Because when we start worrying about what other people are doing and we start pointing fingers, we have to remember, when we point a finger, there are three pointing back at us. And usually the things that we dislike in other people are things that we dislike in ourselves but don't have control over.
Really true.
Interesting. Think about that for a second, you know, because people say, oh, well, I don't like that person, and then. And then if you're like this objective third party, you're like, well, But it's okay for you, but not okay for them. So that's why regulating morality, people have to step aside. You know.
Well, the only.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the only rules that I know of that regulate morality were referred to as commandments, and God forbid that somebody in government stands upon a hill with these plates and tablets and starts reading off the commandments of what the government's going to impose.
Well, what makes, and this I said during the news segment, what makes government feel like they can sit and tell business what to do when 90% of them never had to make a payroll? Until you have to make a payroll, and you know this, until you have to make a payroll, you have not lived, my friend. You do not understand business because you don't get to take your paycheck and screw the people that helped you make it, okay? You have to take care of the people that are taking care of you. And
oh, totally agree.
You can't keep printing this money and telling people that you have to take care of this person and you can't do that. Yet, you know, you can't. You tell me I have to give you money because I make it, but then now you're going to tell me that I can't make it the way that I've been making it. So how does that work exactly? If I can't make the money that you're trying to take from me because I've made too much in your eyes and you want to redistribute it, and now you're telling me I can't make it the way I made it. But if I don't do it this way, I'm not going to make that kind of money, and then you're not going to be able to take that much money because I'm going to have less money to take.
Well, and let's kick in the added unknown that governments and regulators just don't realize is the tenacity, independence, and creativity Americans have. And that really bothers me at times when that's underestimated. Because you start regulating these things, people will start trading and bartering. Way to avoid taxes, services for services. Never underestimate the power of the American citizen and what we're capable of doing, especially when we're pushed into doing it. And this is what we're seeing. And even in investing, we're watching people think of different ways to invest. Watching this community sale this morning. As you know, I'm not big into garage sales and things like that. Not that I don't mind value in shopping from my Jewish heritage, but certainly watching this and in a half hour, 50% of our stuff is sold at 6:30 in the morning, which was completely unexpected to me as a community sale. And these people realize I don't have to pay taxes on this.
I'm not all pro at that. Like when we were growing up, we were so poor. Like we had a garage sale like every weekend. My mom was always trying to sell something.
We go to Goodwill and we do things like that. One, because we're just practical. The other part is organizations like Goodwill are doing good things in the community, and any time you can be a store to the community is a wonderful thing in support of a charity or support of an organization. But there's a great example of people that could go out and pay retail and pay sales tax and everything like this, and when push comes to shove, they're going to start looking at other ways to cope and deal with it. And so there was a lot of things that probably as you and I both are known to do is accumulate stuff. Pardon?
I just hope the city of Queen Creek doesn't come out and get you for...
Should have had a permit or something, right, to do this. But, you know, there's a lot of things that we had that were still packaged items that just hadn't got back to taking back, and you lost the window. So there was some stuff I was selling that was still in the original packaging and things like that, but nobody had to pay taxes on it. I love the creativity of Americans sometimes. It just so amazes me, and I hate it when people underestimate our creative... Or intellectual capital, I'll put it that way, is huge.
Yes, and you know, I've always been a fan of Atlas Shrugged,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and I feel like, you know, he's shrugging. I feel like we are doing exactly what we shouldn't be doing. And Ayn Rand wrote that book as a warning. Because she escaped communist Russia when she was 17. She saw firsthand what too much government interference in your life does. It takes away the spirit of a people. And I just hope that this next election cycle, we can get rid of a lot of these people and put good, hardworking folks in that understand how to make a payroll, that know that you can't give away the house. And you know, while we can have noble goals, if we can't figure out a realistic way to pay for them, then you have to find other avenues. Nonprofit organizations are one of them. You know, the government doesn't have to provide every single service that we need as individuals. Nonprofit organizations are smaller, and they are more effective at addressing community items because it's based on a community. What happens in Washington, D.C. does not necessarily affect me in the city of Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm bound by the laws of Scottsdale. All politics are local. All of that stuff, you know, that you live your daily life by, like your homeowners association rules, those are the things that you need to be concerned about. And
true.
You know,
true. And outside of nonprofit organizations, fraternal organizations do an amazing job of supporting their communities and doing different things. And a lot of people don't turn to those groups and say, I'd like to have a project. And we were having a conversation earlier this week about these parks closing. Why don't some of these communities approach some of the businesses about being stewards in their community and being a public-private partnership to support some of these parks?
Yeah, the government.
That's a win-win situation. Do you remember there was some of the fires a couple of years ago in California? And before the government got involved, all these companies in the local area had already contributed food and water and got things organized and everything. And here comes the government imposing themselves. And people were saying, you know what? All the businesses in this area have come together and helped the community. We don't need your help. And still, no, we're California. We have to come in and help you as a government. And it was just so funny watching the news coverage that these businesses had been stewards of their community and had already jumped in and helped, regardless if it was painful. And for some businesses in the recession, in the continued recession, which I will agree from the top of your show, from the continued recession, they're still willing to give, though. They're still willing to see how they can help their community out and do things. And it's just wonderful. And by the way, for those people investing in a 401k, these businesses, a lot of them are publicly traded, or a lot of them are part of that. And you're investing in those when you invest in U.S. companies in the stock market and the different things that can exist for public-private partnership.
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, I think that the public outpouring for our most recent example of Haiti was greater than our government response. And, you know, because my brother is in the military, he was actually sent over to orchestrate the nonprofit effort because they were starting to have, like, you know, health and safety issues for the folks that were going over there to do the work because government was moving too slow. And there were so many of them, and nobody knew what the other one was doing, and there was overlap, and stuff wasn't getting in there. So my brother was sent over to lead the orchestration of that effort and make sure that the people that were providing aid were safe, as well as they were able to get the aid where it needed to go. And that's, you know, yet another example of the private sector being able to facilitate and move more quickly than big bureaucracies. What,
very true.
It's bringing you on the show, though, as we start, you know, our...
Not like us to get off on a tangent or anything.
I know. On our macroeconomic conversation. It reminds me of the conversation that we had when we did that series, that lecture over at...
the community college?
Yeah.
At GCC?
College. We were so far left of center. Oh, did we answer your question? I don't remember what the question was. Jeff, you?
Yeah.
So we only talk about what we need to be doing to mitigate our risk and layering our risk when it comes to investment for real estate with, you know, how do we structure our debt and things like that. And we talk about, but only loosely, what we need to be doing when we create our financial plan. And we go about it, and for those that take any of the Unlock Your Wealth University classes and or go to some of my seminars, they've actually had the hands-on pencil to the paper construct their financial plan. They do their goal setting. They work them backwards. They figure out what their daily dollars need to be doing. But a lot of people don't understand that you don't just want to be putting your money under the mattress or at the local bank in a savings account. And there's different types of savings or investing that we need to be doing for ourselves. And because they're staggered based on their maturity date, you know, retirement is not today, so we can let that money sit somewhere else, and it can be more aggressive based on whatever our timeline is, and based on our age and our asset mix. But, you know, we don't ever talk specifically about, all right, so Heather says I have to have an emergency fund of 6 months' worth of money. That's money I don't touch unless I'm unemployed or I have a financial emergency, like, you know, the transmission of my car broke and it's going to be $2,000 because I'm out of warranty on it. And that, you know, that happened to me. That's why I bring up that one.
Or there's a killer party at Devil's Martini.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
No. That's not a prudent use of your funds. So for things like that, you know, we don't need the money today, but we might in a year or so. So we don't want to have it in a savings account. So, you know, what do we choose then? Do we choose a money market account? Do we take a type of CD that rolls? Like, do we stagger it? And then, you know, I also have my retirement that I know that I'm doing. So that needs to be invested solely, not saved, because we want it to be able to outpace inflation and grow as well. But then there's these quality of life savings that we need to do also that's not for today, but like that, you know, second honeymoon that people want to take, or a big around-the-world trip, or, you know, maybe their ethnicity, they're an American by birth, but their ethnicity originated in another country, and they want to make a pilgrimage there and spend some time there. This all requires a sufficient amount of money, you know, socked away, because not only is it a cost to go there, but if we only make money solely by our own hand actively working and then we're not working, we need to be able to cover that gap too. So we have quality of life savings, we have our retirement, and we have our emergency funds. And then if and only if we have all three of those in place and we only have good debt, we don't have Mr. Bad Debt because we financed our party at Devil's Martini, then we can begin thinking about, do we educate our children and how do we set aside money for that? But we need to be whole first before we can go into that. What types of accounts should people think about and learn about? Because this is knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful today. So what I want to have you talk about is, what are these different types of accounts that they could possibly use for these different types of savings vehicles?
Well, from the short-term basis, cash on hand, the money market savings account type of vehicle, yeah, terrible interest rates right now, not sufficient to really maintain something. However, on that emergency end, you love to have the cash on hand. And they refer to that as liquidity. So anything that's liquid is going to have a lower interest rate, and it's going to be easy, accessible will be the trade-off for the lower interest rate. When you go out for your long-term stuff, you're just talking about your retirement, and I guess retirement is ambiguous because it depends on what age group you're in, when you want to retire. You can meet somebody that's 40 years old that wants to retire at 50. You can meet somebody that's 35 years old that wants to retire at 70. So they're all different plugins of goals, and those are those longer-term investments where the things like the growth-oriented mutual funds, ETFs, even some individual stocks for people that want to try trading stocks, but are designed for that longer-term approach to weather some storms. Because as I'm assuming that other people realize that the stock market sometimes goes down and up, and maybe that's more relevant, and of course I'm being facetious, but the stock market generally in time is, ironically, has been the best performer on the growth scale out of the standardized investments. I'm sure there's certain real estate things that are probably a little different, but outside of standardized investments, the stock market, even through its ebbs and flows, holds to be the top dog. And that's for your longer term. So we're focused now on this middle intermediate term. And probably the best thing to consider for that is you want to look at something that's going to keep pace with inflation, so that the buying power of your money maintains. And, of course, if you can get any growth out of that outside. So the question then falls into, what is inflation? And inflation, the cost of living around us, right now is supposedly at nothing. Now, I have a hard time with nothing being gas going from $2.50 to $3 to me was a sign of inflation. I don't know about you, Heather, but, you know, I'm a pick-em-up truck kind of guy, and I get to have a vehicle that takes a whole whopping 12 miles to a gallon, and we have an RV that does 4 miles to a gallon. So $2.50 to $3 is a slight change of inflation. And for those playing along with the home game of life, 4% is a pretty reasonable rate of inflation. So anything in that intermediate term, whether it be a long-term goal for a house, intermediate goal of college for the kids, or just to have those extra pilgrimage trips and things, we have to outpace this 4% goal and then maybe look to getting 4 or 5% growth on that. What we watch happen is people want to take that middle road and try to go for stuff that's extremely aggressive. And then the trade-off of it, you might make 15 or 20% a year. But Murphy's Law might dictate that the year you need to happen to take it out, you take a 35% bath. And that usually, for people that did that strategy into retirement, usually ends up the difference between being able to retire and taking a second job in retirement. Does that sound fair from that argument?
Yeah, I agree. You know, we had an interesting guest on the Investor's Edge segment a few weeks ago, Herb Kay. And he said that we wouldn't have any if we would have stayed on the gold standard. And he said that, you know, as technology improves and processes streamline, products should be getting cheaper, but they're getting more expensive because we keep printing this money.
Right. If we're buying consumer, a lowering dollar in our own economy when we're spending our own dollars on United States goods and services really doesn't mean a whole bunch. It's when we've taken those outside. So when we build a product, technology being a great example, and then outsource the building of that product somewhere else where our values devolve, bringing that product, that manufactured product back into the States becomes more expensive, hence you see inflation. So I can understand if the entire world was on one type of, ooh, that's creepy, I just talked about the entire world being on a standardized currency. Sorry. All right, I'll shake that off. Anyway, then technically that theory couldn't happen, and that's the gold standard
of all. Listeners.
Pardon?
Thanks for scaring the crap out of my
listeners. Well, I'm sorry. I'm certainly not talking about it, but in theory, that's what the gold standard thought process is. If there's a gold standard, then everybody would be on the gold standard. So we're not implying that that's a one-world currency, but you're using a one-world item to dictate the value of currency. So technically you would be if everybody was on the gold standard, which is probably a reason why we went off of it. Anyway, so if you have more manufactured products inside the United States, the inflation thing isn't as present. Your dollar buys the same value of dollar if you're buying it. It's when you take that outside approach. And so the more manufacturing we might bring back to the United States, I know, wow, wild concept, huh? Would employ people and keep our dollar stabilized and all these wonderful things that is completely oblivious to the U.S. government. But I digress.
But think about this, though. If we do that and we stop using overseas manufacturing, how are we going to borrow money from the Asians?
Well, that's true. It's an interesting stalemate because a lot of people talk about the Asians wanting to get away from their currency, and the yuan's been pegged at 7 yuan to the dollar for ages because they wanted to stabilize that. Now they're talking about going to gold and developing a different type of currency. And so it probably is a really interesting stalemate for them. Is they may threaten to cash in their treasury bonds, and then somebody comes over from our state government and says, well, I tell you what, if you decide to do that, we might put a tariff on your items, or we might just decide not to buy your items. And so they call the play and say, oh, well, we'll keep buying your treasuries then. So you're at this trade-off, and at some point in time, that's got to break. But for people investing, I still firmly believe, based upon historical models, and of course past history is certainly not indicative of future results, but there's a certain past history of inflation in the economy. And although it may not be totally present now or people are trying to ignore it, it's still potentially there. And for your middle-of-the-road investment, meaning not your short-term money funds and not your long-term retirement funds, but that middle-term investment, you have to think about that. Because the longer term, you can go for bigger growth, because if you're 30 years, 40 years from retirement, why not be more aggressive with some things?
Hey, do you have time to stay with us into the next hour for a little while? Or you gotta
I can if you want. I'm not imposing myself.
No, I'd love to have you longer because I like when we go off on tangents, so I want to be able to do that. Well, let's take a real quick commercial break here, and then we will be back with more extended Investor's Edge with Jeff Cutler here on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back with more after this.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches right after this.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now! For $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there totally! Stay tuned.
Listen, folks, we talked a lot about money on this project, but we haven't talked about how crazy and how obsessed today's culture has gotten about money. So I would like to end this project with a warning. I'd like you to be careful. Be careful. Be careful not to love money. You need to know the truth about money. And the truth is, money's a tool to be used, not a god to be worshipped. Be careful not to love it. Worth it to give up life and family for it. Don't even bother. There's just too many things worth it.
It's a need you gotta fail. It's news you gotta know. And news by the numbers.
Look at it.
Is your favorite part of the show. Yeah.
Yes, it is that favorite time again for Blair, Cherrier, and Puppy to join us. I don't think she realized her mic was live. She's throwing a toy for her doggy. Blair, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, thanks.
I guess I made your mic a little hot before you were ready.
Yeah, I did not know. I was getting her ready so she'd be quiet during this, but I apologize for that.
No problem. It was great. We have all sorts of things. We're a pet-friendly show. Have your doggy sitting listening to the news. Is a good thing. You can have a smarter dog, a financially adept doggy, it says. So, what happened in the markets this week?
Well, it's been quite a run. So, Stephen Carl, head of equity trading at the Williams Capital Group in New York, Carl said momentum could be slowing after stocks have been on a nearly unbroken path upward over the past 2 months. The Dow was up 8.5% during its 2-month climb. The pattern of slow, steady gains leads analysts to believe that investors are becoming less discerning in their stock picking, leaving the market vulnerable if sentiment shifts for the worse. Mark is trying to sort out how overbought it is, says Nate Calabas, Vice President of Financial Research at MF Global in Chicago. That's left us in a choppy state. Volume has been low during the stretch, which an analyst, proof that investors are not fully confident that the gains are built on solid foundation. Despite that skepticism, stocks continued their recent pattern of slow but steady climbs upward Friday. The Dow rose just under 70, or about a half a percent, to a little over 11,000 on Friday, clearing near its high for the day. The gains followed another report showing the economy is getting better. The Commerce Department said sales of new homes jumped 27% in March, bouncing off a record low in February. It was the best month since July and the biggest monthly increase in 47 years. However, much of the recent big gains in home sales were likely fueled by customers who are trying to qualify for federal tax credits that will expire at the end of the month. Friday was the second straight day the sector got good news. On Thursday, the National Association of Realtors said sales of existing homes also rose last month. Joe Hyder, principal of Raymond in Cleveland, said the home sales report is a strong indication that consumers are growing more confident about the economy. We're seeing that people have the confidence to make the biggest purchase of their lives, Hyder said, and that bodes well for the market. Shares of home builders, including Pulse Group and Lennar Corporation, rose sharply as hopes grew that the troubled housing sector may finally be on the mend. Housing has been one of the hardest hit sectors in the economy, helping to the economy into recession in late 2007. Golden Oil rose after the housing report, pushing shares of energy and materials stocks higher throughout the day. Dow components, Microsoft Corporation and Travelers, both fell after their quarterly results failed to impress investors. Travelers fell 41 cents to a little over $53, and Microsoft shares fell 43 cents to almost $31. The technology-heavy NASDAQ was hurt by a disappointing earnings outlook from Amazon.com. Its shares fell about $6.50, or 4.3%, to $143. Home builders were the big gainers on the day. Pulte shares rose 71 cents, or about 5.5%.
Hey, Jeff, what are you thinking about all of this going on in the market this week after Goldman Sachs?
Well, I actually had really thought that once healthcare reform was passed, that the financial industry, to go after the financial industry, was only an extreme backup plan for this thing we talked about with regulating morality. But hence they decided to go for it anyway. So Goldman Sachs, it's one particular fund. It's a hedge fund in the group. Heather, I've got some issues with that whole thing because a lot of the people they're talking about were professional investors. Now, you and I both know that if I'm an institution selling to another institution, they consider us to be smart. Therefore, we can't really go after them for malpractice or ignorance, per se. And in this case, this hedge fund was sold off to a lot of different bigger institutional investors, and then those institutional people sold it to their individual people. So they're considered as qualified, competent buyers as institutions and banks, and I don't know what regulation really it comes down to here, but it's one fund out of their group, and Goldman's been a great underwriter for a long time. Not that I'm drinking the Goldman Kool-Aid, but you know, you're back in this financial reform thing all over again, and just kind of a bad timing. Mm-hmm. Like anything related to the auto industry, Toyota just happened to be in the bad timing for what's going on with them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Blair, the stock indexes rose in Europe after Greek officials said that they would tap a rescue package. What were the other pundits saying?
Well, it did say the move gave Greece better interest rates on its debt than it would be able to get from private investors. Some remain skeptical, however, if the bailout would provide a long-term solution to Greece's debt woes. Investors also expect that other weak European countries, such as Portugal, may require help, further undermining confidence in the euro, Europe's shared currency. The euro did rebound late in the day against the dollar after touching its lowest level in a year against the U.S. currency early on Friday. And bond prices fell as investors moved into stocks. The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note rose to 3.8% from 3.78% late Thursday.
What do you think about that, Jeff?
With the Greek debt thing? Well, you know, we like acronyms for everything. And so we were in this BRIC acronym phase for the longest time, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And so now we're into this new one for pigs, which is Portugal, Italy, and Ireland, and I'm forgetting what G is now. Look at me.
Greece.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Yeah. And then Spain. And that's our new hip term. And these are countries that are considered at risk of their debt. And so Greece is trying to get support of their debt. But keep in mind, folks, that's one of five letters in that little scenario.
Yeah. So they're 20% of the pie.
Right. And so what happens if they fix theirs? Does that automatically impose that the European groups need to go and bolster all the other pig countries, or do we have to wait for each one of these dominoes to go down?
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that, because, you know, their economy is real interesting. I mean, when you're over there, and I was a visitor there, so, you know, I mean, I was doing the touristy thing, so, you know, I don't really know what their financial markets are like day to day. I can't speak to that. You know, I only know what we hear. But they have a vibrant community, so.
Well, that's part of that whole concept. I've been over there the last couple of summers, not necessarily in Greece, but all through the European countries, because we were doing observations of how socialist type of behaviors work, and the communal, everything's taken care of by the government type of concept. And you almost give in to it. It's so beautiful, you know, the countrysides are so pretty, everybody is mellow, everybody's enjoying themselves, far more social and recreation times, and then you start to realize, what did they give up? They gave up their ability and drive to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what separates American people. We think of building a better mousetrap. In Italy, we were talking to people, in Switzerland, we were talking to people, and he says, I can be a software developer for $4,000 a month, or I can be a waiter for $3,500 a month, or I can sit on a park bench and get drunk all day for $3,300 a month. After a while, the $700 a month isn't worth it.
Yeah.
And so they lose all their creativity, and I would really hate to see America get to that point. And that's the scariest part. Having programs to help people that need help and get people to a different level of their lives, great. But having it to where it's just easier to give in and have the government do everything, it takes away part of that intellectual capital again. And that's what I saw in Europe, was that people had no motivation to do anything.
Yeah, well, why would you?
Well, I was at a display of some museum, and they have their Hall of Great Achievement, and the latest thing on the list was from 1882.
Yeah.
Of scientific breakthroughs they'd made. I looked at my wife and I said, these people haven't created anything new since 1882?
Yeah. Well,
wow. That certainly wouldn't be representative of America. I'm sure everybody else has different opinions on this, and opinions is what makes investing. A trade has to be an optimist and a pessimist settling their argument with money.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, Blair, thanks so much for that stock market update. I'm going to let you go because I know you probably have chatters to tend to. So,
okay, thank you.
So thanks. We'll look forward to seeing what happens next week.
Always.
All right. Yeah, it's provocative as to what.
Yeah, well.
So.
Gosh, we talked about the government. We've talked about pigs. We've talked about socialists. Are we talking about the same thing? Oh, too soon.
But I'm bummed. I have a rim shot in here. I got this one.
Okay, that was an applause. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's.
We don't have our live kids studio audience anymore, huh?
You know, what was that one button you pressed that time?
Oh, the chicken. I still tell the story of the chicken to people on radio.
Tell the listeners this story. They're going to love this.
Oh, they really want to hear the story.
I want to hear it again because it just brings back such great memories.
It's okay, so we'll revert to this as famous stories that happen in radio. So one day, Heather and I, in our novice part of our careers as talk show hosts, were in a station, which will remain nameless, and they had put in a sound effects machine. And so Heather and I were pretty excited about the fact this new sound effects machine called a 360 machine was there present, which, you know, you press the buttons and they have these different sound effects, and they're labeled, and there's a dog barking and a car horn and this chicken and rooster, and there's applause and different things like that, and you use them as cues like Heather just did a minute ago for the audience. So now everybody's kind of with us in the studio here. So Heather and I are so excited about this machine working, and we're telling the people in the audience that, look, we can now press these buttons for sound effects. So I press this button for a dog barking, and I hear nothing. We don't know if it goes out on the air or not. And then I start pressing this chicken. And it's chicken clucking or rooster crowing or something of that nature. And I keep pressing. I thought, well, Heather, are you hearing this? I'm not hearing this. We have headphones on. And so, yeah, we could not get the machine to work. So I thought, well, this is crazy. Why did they put this machine on and it's not working? And I'm pressing buttons left and right and pressing all these different things. So finally our board operator gets on the intercom and says, Jeff, that's hooked up to the Christian station next door. And so apparently what had happened, unbeknownst to us, was there was a live ministry going on air at the Christian station next door that was interrupted by chickens clucking and dogs barking and everything during the man's sermon, which, whoever that was, I still apologize profusely, but it was actually a very funny moment in radio. And next week when we came back, ironically, the machine was taken away before we got there and then put back apparently after we left.
Wrong room. Like, yeah. They put it in, and then they realized they couldn't wire it in our studio, so they wired it for the other studio, but never took a box away from us. And I think that that's where how the mistake happened. Because, I mean, like, in their right mind, why would you wire it for a separate studio? So I think
I have no idea, but I would love to hear from somebody that actually listened to that sermon and then suddenly was interrupted by chickens and dogs and whatever else I was pressing.
Yeah.
So that was a wonderful... And that had nothing to do with financial whatsoever.
I have awes and applause. That's all I have.
Well, I meant that segue. There's that back to that tangent thing. See, if we could create a hedge fund that just dealt on our tangents, we'd make people a fortune.
We would be in the thick of things for sure, that's for sure. So let's go back to that conversation we were having before the commercial break in the news. And you were talking about, you know, age-appropriate investing, you know, when it came to long-term savings. But, like, what type of investment vehicle could you use? And you know, and all I'm trying to do is get the audience familiar with the vernacular and the terminology so they can go ask these questions when they go meet with their financial advisor. So what type, when you're talking about quality of life savings, so, like, you know, maybe we want to put a pool in the backyard in a couple of years, or we want to take that, you know, world trip or something, you know. So you don't have to have it today, but you want to make some money on it, but you don't want to have too much risk because, you know, if you started up and then went down, and, you know, you're like on a 5 to 10 year investment horizon for this money, or well, for your pay in before you start pulling it out, you know, you've got, you know, a market cannot necessarily swing in two directions that fast. So what would somebody use for a quality of life savings? Where could they put their money so they would get more than a savings account rate?
Well, this is hard a little bit because, one, I'm not having an individual conversation with any of your listening audience, so these can't be considered as any type of recommendations to a specific investor.
No, but just
let's see how much compliance gets in my life.
What type of investments are out there for them? That they can go after.
Well, okay. Well, the next most standard approach up, if we're taking the scale of risk, because as we segue out of money markets, your audience needs to understand that it loses safety. So the trade-off for safety is low rates of interest because nobody's taking much risk. The bank's not taking a big risk. You're not taking a big risk. So the minute we step out onto that plane and now a corporation takes a little bit of a risk by issuing a bond because they're taking a risk and having the debt obligation that they have to pay, you're taking the risk that the company could default. So naturally, the interest rate would be a little higher and things, if we start at the scale supposed to go, to savings accounts, money markets, and then upgrade to CDs, and then we start traveling on the path of government securities, municipal securities, then we get into corporate bonds. And government and municipal securities, by the way, it's securities, it's bonds. They don't issue any form of equity, so there's no stocks offered for the government. So bonds are pretty much theirs, and then you have your treasury bills, your treasury notes, and your treasury bonds in those series. And then from there, you eventually get the corporate bonds, and then you get the high-risk corporate bonds, and then you start going into the stock market. So the stock market is about midway on the teeter-totter, and then the farthest side of the teeter-totter on the other way is lottery tickets or the casino, which we're certainly not recommending anything like that. So for somebody that wanted to go intermediate and they would look at a growth horizon, they might look at increasing from bonds as one level of safety. Now, a government bond might be in the, depending on how long of a term, you might be in the 2 to 3% area for a mid-range term government bond. And, of course, they're backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. So insert whatever comment after that you'd like. Then you go into corporate bonds. Corporate bond world's probably in the rough guess in the mid-range from the 4s to the 5s. And then you start getting into the higher range corporate area, and you're probably somewhere in the 6s to 10% interest rates. But, of course, you're taking a risk that that company is offering a higher risk. Just the same way that you would get a higher, if you're more of a credit risk, right, for a home, your interest rate's going to be higher. So the same thing, you're taking more of a credit risk by buying this corporate bond, so they know they have to hire you at a higher interest rate, so the dangling carrot's better. When you get into stocks, the growth, that can be across the board. The average stock market growth is somewhere in the 10 to 11% area for a long-term history of strong companies. And some of the speculative stuff you can make 30, 40, 50% on, and of course you could lose everything. So probably the conversation for a financial advisor would go some to the effect of, financial advisor, I need to create a multiple bucket strategy, because that's something they should understand. Buckets. So we have different, our investments in different little buckets. And once you have that conversation, they'll understand you have the short-term bucket, which is your immediate, your reserves, which I will refuse to call emergency reserves, but reserves. And then you have this, your long-range planning bucket, and then you have your retirement bucket. Now, there may be subsets like a college savings bucket or the new pool bucket or those type of things that are all little buckets that are fed off that central, that center bucket. Is that working well?
I like it.
Okay.
I like it a lot. You might actually make the best of for this season.
I make, the best of because of my bucket speech? Well, there's a bucket list, so... But you don't want to talk to them about your bucket list because then they're going to bring up life insurance first, and they're going to miscue that one. So if you want to have a conversation with a financial advisor, like, I'd like to have a conversation about a multi-bucket strategy. And then you might scare your financial advisor if they're inexperienced. I have no idea what this person's talking about because they used everyday language in talking to me. Oh, my God. Remember, we always try to act all some of us try to act all superior by using all this Al Gore kind of language on people, and it gets lost.
And industry vernacular does nothing for rapport. It only alienates people, so that's why I try to stay away from jargony comments, or I introduce it only as an opportunity to explain what it really means.
Well, hence the community sale going on outside, which I have to rejoin soon because my wife has notified me it's time for her bathroom break. But outside of there, that is no different than what I see on the New York Stock Exchange floor. I have a series of things. They're priced to what I feel is a fair value. Somebody comes up and determines what the fair value is, and it's really a supply and demand issue. The more people I have, the bigger the crowd that's out there, the more I can get the price I'm asking for because there's more competitiveness. The fewer amount of people, and as the day wears on, my prices will come down to meet demand because less people are showing up, and I still have stuff left over. So what you see right there at a garage sale is the same thing that you would experience on the New York Stock Exchange floor every day. And that's the biggest thing that advisors don't talk about, is your everyday life is no different than our life. What, this thing with Wall Street and Main Street being different things, it's all the same. It's all our economy. So if you pound on Wall Street and pound on regulations for Wall Street, where is it going to trickle down, Heather?
Right.
To the everyday person. And it's going to trickle down in higher fees, higher expenses, lower interest rates, higher regulations, and less things that you can do with the freedom of your own money.
Yeah. And when there's less things to do, then there's less returns to make.
Correct.
It all away.
Correct, and that falls into that restriction thing. So.
Yeah, and so when I can't make it by the natural market forces, when too many people get in there and say, oh, you can't trade like that, you can't do it like this, what happens is then your returns evaporate.
Exactly.
Because you tune up in fees. Because the funds are going to make their money. Whether or not you make your money is another issue.
Well, there's a lot of regulations out there, especially with FINRA, which is the Financial Regulatory Industry Association, the newer group of the last 4 or 5 years that regulates individual advisors. Keep in mind, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the people watching pornography while they're doing interviews and stuff, and I'm being accusatory, I'm sorry, it's just all over the news right now, so it's very topical. But the SEC's responsibility is to publicly traded companies. It's not to the individual advisors. The individual advisors are regulated by FINRA. And you can go to FINRA.org and learn all about that, and you can check out your broker and see if they have any compliance or regulatory history. But FINRA is imposing a lot of stuff for the industry that has a great deal of effect on you as an individual investor, and you may want to look at what some of the regulations coming down, because I'm not sure if investors are aware of all that they would agree with a lot of the regulations that are being worded. And FINRA apparently accepts public comments, so any of you investors out there that look at that and think, well, that's not right, that would be an extra fee to me. If they impose that, you may want to try sending an email off or something. Yeah, exactly, because they need that feedback. They just don't get that feedback because very few people go to FINRA.org's website, and they've spent a great deal of money creating it from finding the industry. So that's what the money went. Every time they find the industry and find an advisor and find a broker, they put that money into a big pool, and that's what pays for the education on the FINRA site. So is a useful tool, but you will learn a lot about what the industry is proposing in fees, expenses, charges, what the rules and regulations related to investment parameters that we talked about, which you as a consumer investor may end up with restrictions that FINRA felt were appropriate for you.
Yeah, because you didn't say that they weren't.
Right.
Speak up.
So if I come back to be on the show again and I end up not licensed, we'll figure out what happened. Meaning FINRA didn't like what I said.
We're not soliciting any business. You were here
for no, I was not soliciting any business. We were having a very generalized conversation, and, of course, it was not appropriate for regular people, and nor are we even talking about firms or issues or anything of that nature.
My
listeners
are not regular people. They're special people.
Okay. Well, those special people out there should enjoy the rest of your show, and I will now break free to provide a break for somebody special in my life.
Outstanding. Tell Tammy I said hello. And,
I will.
Thank her for allowing you to come on the show today. We have so much more to go through. We've got your Millionaire Minute. We've got the key and nuts and bolts all on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We will be right back after this.
Are you a referral partner of the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program? Would you like to promote your products and your services on our show? Learn about the benefits that our featured advertisers receive being part of an exclusive program where the listeners are seeking financial independence and are in need of your insurance, finance, real estate, and investment services. Call now at 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Reach the people who need your help the most with the Unlock Your Wealth radio show today. Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twoforthroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420. Or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today,
I've seen the future. I can't afford it.
Welcome to the Millionaire Minute here on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. This is the segment where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now today. Here are 10 things you did not know about millionaires. Getting rich isn't about money. Number one, Peter Lynch says if you spend 15 minutes a year studying the economy, that's 10 minutes too many. Number two, accentuate the positive. Most of us have read books like Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. It was summarized for a reason. Number three, think differently. Go inside the millionaire mind and be different from the crowd. Number four, quit doing what you hate. Don't live in quiet desperation anymore. Number five, do what you love. Number six, find the real you. Number seven, invest in you, Inc. Number eight, live with passion. Number nine, live in the present moment. And number 10, make sure you make a difference. Now, fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward into the future and watch how differently people will respond to you. Imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you have just integrated into your personality. And that is your Millionaire Minute. For an in-depth look at the Millionaire Minute, join us Tuesdays at 6:30 in the morning for Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And start your day the millionaire way. Now, we talked about not knowing is powerful. The second half of knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful. I just had Jeff give you a little taste of what types of investment vehicles are out there. Whether they're right for you or not is what you have to determine with your financial advisor. But you need to have a plan. And last week, we created our goals, and we evaluated what our timeline is to accomplish those goals. And so based on that information, you can structure what you need to create financial independence for you and your family by the timeline you've set forth. But that's just one area of your financial life that you need to be paying attention to. And in this key, knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful, what we need to do is take a financial inventory, not in how much money we have, because we've been working on that through our keys process, but this is a financial knowledge inventory. What do you know about life financially? And let's take that list and talk about the 10 most important financial areas of your life and see how you fare on this knowledge checklist. And we'll see where you are, and that will determine what you need to do next. So let's start with this list, shall we? I'm going to blaze through them and give you the whole list, and we'll work through each one. What do you know about credit cards, keeping financial records, and your debt? That's kind of one category. The next category is, what do you do with or where do you store your important personal documents? Have you addressed all areas of your financial life? Because they should be all located in one particular place that's safe from fire or water damage. And if it's somewhere within your home, is it in one area where you can grab the most crucial documents? If you had to leave something, it wouldn't be these things. So these would be the things that you would all need in one particular area. What about your automobiles, cars, RVs, boats, recreational stuff? That's another important financial area of your life. Personal insurances. We're talking about life insurance, health insurance, car insurance, home insurance. Personal insurances. Social Security. It might not be so relevant to people my age or younger. But what do you know about Social Security? And have you been contributing? And if you have, do you know what you'll be able to withdraw at the end of the road? Retirement. It's an important financial area of your life. And with dreams with deadlines, we got to know what we're doing then. Your investments financially is another section. And this can be both your financial and real estate-related investments in one category. Here's the toughie. Here's the one that people have a huge time addressing, and so most people haven't addressed it, especially when they need to. And because that's daunting for someone, estate planning is so delicate and so difficult, but you have to do it. And the problem that people have when they do it, or I should say before they do it, because once they do it, it goes away, is they have to come to terms with their own mortality. And unless you have a parent die, you don't know what it means to come to terms with your own mortality. And I'm not talking about people that get depressed and think of taking their lives and stuff like that. I'm talking about what happens in old age and what happens when I pass. who do I want to get my stuff? Who will appreciate it? Who would be a good steward? Who's going to frivol it away? How do I keep people from frivoling what I create away? And that's difficult, so people typically avoid it because that involves writing a will. So you have to think about what's going to happen when you're not here. And on top of trying to figure out how we can just put another meal on the table, sometimes keeps us from doing this. It allows us to stay in denial that of our own mortality. And so if we're in denial of our own mortality, we don't have to address it. It's a fabulous thing, denial, to go there, not the river, the personal state of being. And then there's always taxes. How much do I owe? How much am I going to owe? What have I already paid? What have I underpaid? How do I not overpay? And then how do I reduce my taxable obligation over time? As my income increases, how do I make my taxes decrease? And then last but not least, individual home ownership. These are very important, significant areas of your financial life that you need to address. What we need to do is address them. And before we go to address them, we have to take a financial inventory, a financial knowledge inventory. What do we really know about credit cards and keeping good bookkeeping records and the amount of debt that we have, unsecured debt? What do we really know about that? Have we been good about it, only charging what we can afford to pay off at the end of the month? Or do we charge and then not pay off and buy things that are frivolous that we clearly can't afford to pay cash for, so we buy it on credit because we just have to have it because we figure out a way to justify it? Maybe we need to seek a personal finance consultant or a financial coach to help us get our finances on track and to create a healthy savings and spending plan. So what do we know? Do we need to seek someone out? What do we know about investing? You know, Jeff is probably one of the greatest communicators I know on basic information about differentiating between different investment vehicles. What are they? How do they work? And that was one of the reasons why I brought him on, specifically for the knowledge is power, not knowing is powerful, to illustrate to you, what do you know? Did you know about those different investment vehicles that he talked about, how they worked, how much money they made, what level of risk they had? Do you want to know, or do you just want to know enough to hire somebody like him and pay him to know it? You don't have to know it. He just does it for you. I used to be really involved in my money management, and I used to watch the markets every day, even after I stopped day trading and then, you know, when I went into mortgages. I just still had to have a hands-on, and I'm like, that way, at the end of the day, the only person that's at fault is me. And then I just got too busy to spend that kind of time. And I know better, obviously. I have a professional working knowledge of what goes on in the stock market and the bond market. But do I really want to sit there and watch it every day? Do I want to babysit that? Why don't I find somebody like Jeff who can do all of that for me, that loves to do that? So identify how much knowledge you have. And maybe you need to seek an advisor. Now, if you haven't, it's worth your while. And most of them do a no-charge conversation so you can talk in glittering generalities about what you want to accomplish financially and where you want things to go. And you need to go meet with an estate planning and tax attorney. And even if they charge you money, that you can do a consulting fee. You don't have to buy any of their plans. You don't have to spend more money. But you need to know what you don't know about passing inheritance. I think back about, God, it's been a long time now. Had to have been in the 90s when Joe Robbie Stadium was transferred to the Airs when he passed and transferred the stadium to his children. And because they didn't have the right investment advice, think about this, somebody that has enough money to buy a stadium does not have the savvy to get the right kind of estate planning tax attorney put in place or chose one at all. The children had to sell the stadium in order to pay the inheritance taxes on it. So it's not just about you making a lot of money and giving it to your kids or your family, or if you don't have kids and you want to will it to an organization, you know, I don't have any personal offspring, and so I've created a legacy plan at the Phoenix Zoo because I love animals, and it's one of two private zoos in the United States and one of the most prolific ones, too. And so I just I created part of my estate plan. And so that way they can receive part of what I leave behind, and they're not going to be stuck with the ramifications of having to pay all those taxes on it because of the way I set it up. But I would have never known how to do that because I am not an estate planning tax attorney. But I had to go hire one in order to see that what I want for my legacy, once I pass, comes to fruition. And that's what you need to think about, too, is you need to think about, what do I need to do to get this stuff where I want it to go and how I can mitigate not only paying taxes now but not burdening my heirs with taxes on this stuff in the future. So you need to work on that. And any type of financial stuff that's related to that, you know, you have to make sure that you keep good records of all of that. That's so important. If you don't know how to do that, take a class on good record keeping. See how bookkeepers do it. You can take an introductory bookkeeper class, and then you'll learn what the pros do, how they're tracking finances. Because just because your personal life is your personal life doesn't mean that it shouldn't run flawlessly like a business does. And so you can add that level of professionalism by either going out and taking a class and learning about it or delegating it to somebody who can do that. Bookkeepers are great when you have multiple businesses. Bookkeepers are great when you have multiple income streams and multiple people to pay. They take care of all of that for you, and it's so great when that happens. So last is a home ownership, you know. How do I take title? How do I transfer title? If you're not familiar with that, you need to consult. For the acquisition, you need to consult a mortgage person and a real estate agent. And then when it comes to protecting that asset, you need to make sure that you have it properly insured and that you've accommodated for that in your estate plan and you know how it's going to transfer and you set up the title properly up front so you know it transfers right. So these are just some things that you need to be paying attention to when it comes to managing your money. And most people don't even know that they have to address these things. And so that's why it's so important that we take the time to go through this knowledge checklist. Now, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this week's key, I have an offer for you, and that is that if you would like a copy of this knowledge checklist and you are interested in what we went over and you don't want to take the time to listen to the broadcast all over again, then what you need to do is email us at checklist@unlockyourwealth.com, checklist@unlockyourwealth.com, and you too can receive the knowledge checklist so you can go through and make sure that you've properly addressed each area of your life. So this week's key statement is, While I know that knowledge is power, not knowing and identifying my areas of concern is powerful. Because once I recognize what I don't know, I can go out and acquire that specified knowledge or know that I want to choose to delegate it to a professional. So our key affirmation for this week is I am great at capitalizing on my strengths and identifying and correcting my weaknesses. I am great at capitalizing on my strengths and identifying and delegating my weaknesses. Now, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we are in our Nuts and Bolts segment of our Keys to Riches. And simply put, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And through our affirmation process, this is how we convince our inner curmudgeon that we have goals that are worthy of us and that we are capable. So we say our affirmations several times throughout the day. The first time we do our affirmations is right before we go to bed. We read our affirmations out loud to ourselves so we can focus our subconscious mind on creating new neural pathways while we're having restful, restorative sleep all night long. So we are able to come up with new ways and ideas by morning on how to create these things for ourselves in our lives. And then the next thing that we do is when we wake up in the morning, we're not going to roll over and kiss the spouse or take the dog out. We're going to pull out our affirmation list, and we're going to review them again. And what we're doing now is we are focusing our conscious mind after a night of restful, restorative sleep on our higher purpose of the day. Our higher purpose is not to let the dog out, feed the kids, take them to school, drop them off at their various practices, pick up the dry cleaning, come back, grab the kids, go to the next function, and so on. That's our day-to-day life. Our higher purpose is those things that we wish to bring into our lives, and so we say our affirmations as if they are happening now so we can bring those things into our lives, because our brain will figure out the how if we know and are passionate about the why. And then the next time we say our affirmations is any time throughout the day where we need to shrug up some negativity, because, folks, what we think about, we bring about. And if we're focused on the things that we don't have and the negative things in life, that's all we're going to continue to have, nothing and negativity. However, if we focus our minds positively on the things that we do desire and wish to have in our lives, then that is what we will bring about, because what we think about, we bring about. Our brains are the greatest supercomputer in the whole universe. Nothing is more powerful or significant or resourceful than our brain. All we have to do is give it the right information, like a computer programmer. Garbage in, garbage out. So anytime we encounter negativity, we are going to whip out our affirmation sheet again after that negative encounter has occurred, and we are going to retrain our brain. We are going to program our thoughts for positivity, and we are going to go through our affirmations again, because what we think about, we bring about. And we don't want somebody else's negative attitude to fester inside of us, because it'll grow like cancer. It'll start out real slow, and it'll be small where it's undetected, and then before you know it, you're overwhelmed with negativity. And so anytime somebody else does that to you, and sometimes they do it deliberately, to rain on you, to bring your, cause a pity party, to bring you down, because they don't want you any better than they are. People tend to be like that. So you want to make sure that you're always thinking positive thoughts and you're working hard to create that in your life. And so you say your affirmations again out loud when you have a moment away from that negative experience so you can retrain your brain for success. Again, the brain is so powerful and so productive that whatever we tell it to do, we do. That's why we have to be careful of the words that we use, that we want to stay away from using negative words because the brain tunes out on that, on our no stuff, and it focuses on what it can accomplish. And so it hears your words, and then that's what happens. It makes whatever it is you're focusing on happen. So for this week's key action item, your charge, meaning assignment, not going out to spend money, is to go through your knowledge checklist and look at, which is actually 13 areas of your financial life, and go through and identify what all of these things are. So recognize what they are first. Do I know anything about this? Do I know something about this? Do I know a lot about this? Do I know something about this or do I know a lot about this, but I just don't want to do it? I don't have the time or inclination to pay attention to this, so you can hire a professional. So identify what your strengths and weaknesses are. And if you have lack of investment knowledge, seek out an investment advisor. If you have lack of banking knowledge, find a banker. If you don't have debt management and budgeting skills, seek out a financial coach. And when you need to create wills, trusts, or legal issues, you need to seek out an estate planning tax attorney. If you don't understand or know if you are properly or adequately insured, you need to seek out an insurance agent. So that's what your job is for this week, for your key action item, is to go through these areas of your financial life and identify what you can and can't do. And then make the next determination, am I going to learn or am I going to delegate? And that is your nuts and bolts for this week. I am so tickled. Fourth week in now, here we go. We've got take emotion out of the picture for next week's key, and we will have all of our show guests and fabulous information coming up on next week's show available for you shortly. And for those of you, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you so much to Blair for News by the Numbers and to Jeff Cutler for joining us and spending time sharing his knowledge and energy and enthusiasm for life, regardless of what's going on. And thank you for tuning in and for making us the number one wealth radio show. Week after week, we're consistently scoring these great marks because of you, the listener, because you're enjoying and implementing the content and coming back hungry for more. So thank you so much for seeing the value in what we do every day. If you have not subscribed to the e-zine, remember it's e-zine, E-Z-I-N-E, at unlockyourwealth.com. Also remember our mascot contest. I would like to know what animals you think would best convey financial advice. And then from that, I would also like a name, if you have some clever name. And again, it's $100 to you. I didn't get from our dear Blair, who's moderating the chat room. So nobody won the trivia question in the chat room. So if you're downloading this, it's your chance to win. And again, we talked about ways to cut expenses during retirement. Just name one to win. And you can send that to trivia@unlockyourwealth.com. Trivia@unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks again for joining us. You've been listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be broadcasting again Tuesday morning for our Millionaire Nuts and Bolts from Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. So be sure to turn in Tuesday morning to start your day the millionaire way. Thank you so much for joining us this Saturday, and we'll see you again on Tuesday. Take care, and here is to your financial independence.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.